Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. Today is Wednesday, March 16th, 2022. The time is 2:03. I'm Senator Costello. With me is Senate President Senator Michicki. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon.
Senator Stevens, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Good to be here.
And Senator Gray Jackson, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We have three items on today's agenda. And the first one is Senate Bill 185. This is Senator Michicki's bill to eliminate a minimum wage exemption. This is the second hearing in Labor and Commerce, and I would ask for a motion to adopt the committee substitute. I think Senator Stevens has that. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 185, version India, also referred to as 32-LS1443/I.
And I'll object for an explanation of changes from the committee aide, Melody Wilterdink.
Thank you, Chair Costello, members of the committee. For the record, this is Melody Wilterdink, staff to Senator Costello. So this is an explanation of changes for Senate Bill number 185. It is from version Bravo to version India. So the change occurs on page 1 of the original bill. On lines 8 and 9, previously there was an exemption added in that would have allowed sub-minimum wages to be paid to someone who is under the age of 18, temporarily employed by a nonprofit. The new version, version India, removes that language and then renumbers the following two sections. Thank you.
Welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. And I have just removed my objection to the new version of the bill. Is there any further objection, or would we like further explanation? Senator Michicki?
Yeah, I don't have any objection. I'm very supportive of the changes. I think the goal that I had, so when we were removing some language, I wanted to make sure we didn't miss something that may have been used in the past for community projects, which is why we kind of added that back in. But there are other methods and other pieces of law that allow volunteers on a project to be rewarded for volunteering. This doesn't hurt that, and really this just gets back to the primary reason for the bill. The primary reason for the bill is removing relatively offensive language that sort of created a two-tier system depending on whether someone was disabled or not. So I appreciate the changes and support the CS.
And Senator Michicki, I have a question. So with the new committee substitute, a nonprofit can still have an underage individual work for them as long as they don't go below federal minimum wage, which is quite low anyway. Is that correct?
That is correct. Or they can simply have a group of volunteers that they think in some other way. And I'm not saying it in a way that sounds like it's avoiding the law. We do many community projects, all of you do, completely with volunteers. You can still teach them the value of a hard day's work in other ways, or they can use the federal minimum wage.
And thank you. And just so my question isn't misunderstood, I actually would like the young individuals to receive minimum wage. And just wanted to make sure that there is a floor there in case a nonprofit doesn't have any money to pay for the individual. They still, have that option to go to to that level of payment, which is quite low. And anyway, so I just wanted to get that on the record. So I'll go ahead and remove my objection. Is there any further objection to the new version of the bill? Okay, seeing none, the committee substitute has been adopted. And we have Tanya Keith, who is the Chief Labor Standards and Safety Wage and Hour individual from Labor and Workforce Development. And are there any questions that the committee members have for Tanya? Okay, seeing none. Take a brief at ease. Senate Labor and Commerce Committee is called back to order. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 185, version India, also referred to as 32-LS1443/I, be advanced from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Is there any objection to moving Senate Bill 185 as amended? Okay, seeing none, it moves from committee, and we will take a brief at ease to sign the documents. And then I'll ask Commissioner appointee Julie Sandy to come forward. Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. I also wanted to take a moment to thank our recording secretary, Carrie, and the LIO operator, Doug. I failed to thank you at the beginning of the meeting, but we appreciate what you do to make this meeting possible. So thank you. Next on the agenda, we have Commissioner Designee Julie Sandy. This is a commissioner for the appointment for the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. So welcome to the committee. We'll go ahead and take a moment to hear from you, and we have your resume in front of us. We'll have a conversation with the committee members, and then we'll open for public testimony your appointment, and then we'll look to the will of the committee. So welcome to Labor and Commerce, and please feel free to state your name and explain your interest in serving as commissioner of this really important department for the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chairman Costello and members of the committee. It's an honor for me to be here. I'm still getting used to it. For the record, my name is Julie Sandy, and I'm the commissioner designee for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. I just appreciate the opportunity to be here. I've met with each of you individually. For some of you, I think I was able to explain before my background, but I grew up in logging camps in Southeast Alaska. I'm a Southeast girl, and I'm really proud of that. Although I will say, you know, I've said before, this process, the confirmation process, will cure anybody of any narcissistic tendencies in terms of my speaking about myself over and over, and even I'm getting tired of it. But so I appreciate your patience with that, and if you could bear with me if you've heard it before. But I volunteered at the Pioneer Home when I was in middle school. It's a family joke because I wasn't volunteering. My mom is the most feisty little Korean lady you've ever met, and when she says you're going to do something, you're going to do it. And so she was an employee at the Pioneer Home and retired after 30 years there. Very proud of her for her service to the elders. But in working, in volunteering at the Pioneer Home as a middle school kid, I just fell in love with the elders. I gained a real appreciation for our history and also for what those folks have done for our state and how hard they had to work and how brave they had to be. It really changed the course of my life, and I went on then to get a degree so that I could come back and work at the Pioneer Home where I hope to work until I retired. That was my life's aspirations. But so I worked at the Pioneer Home and as the social worker for 5 years, and then I was the director of the Pioneer Home for many years after that, and retired, I think, after 22 years. But running parallel to my service to the elders in our community was several private businesses that our family owns, and we provide services throughout the region. And so looking back on it now, I think that gave me a pretty healthy balance in terms of sort of my day job, although it was a 24-hour facility, so you never got off shift. But having that public sector experience, both from the service part of things, but also just understanding the how state budgets are built, it's very different than the private sector. And so having the private sector and public sector experience, I think, really helped me, especially in the seat that I'm in today. In addition to that, I served on the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority boards and the Alaska Energy Authority board. So when I think about balanced perspectives, I think those two boards really helped me understand large infrastructure projects in a way that I wouldn't have understood before had I not served on those boards. I really appreciate the experience that I had on the boards. And I would also just say I'm a pretty good multitasker. I think moms in general probably are. That's not a shot at the dads in the room, but I think, transporting kids to soccer games and, you know, having lots of other things on your plate and being able to juggle that is probably a pretty good, it helps me in this role for sure, because I'm moving at a pretty fast pace in this role. And I'm just really looking forward to being able to work with the team and to work with you guys. And I'd like to answer any questions you might have for me.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your very impressive background with the committee. And I will start with Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate meeting with you in my office. Thanks for coming by. And right, you have a tremendous background. How do you... So it's commerce, community, economic development. Are they three equal parts, or how do you divide that job up? Do you have people who head each of those divisions, or how does it actually work in that department?
Thank you, Senator Stevens, through the chair. It's a good question. I just left a meeting talking about division of insurance and the ways in which we are obligated to protect consumers. So I feel like so far, It has been three equal parts, though I think what's critically either injured or challenged is probably what's in front of you at the time. But I'm really finding that I'm spending equal time in all three of those roles right now. There are six different divisions under the department, and I will say in the time that I've been in the position, and that's been all of 8 weeks, and again, my first day on the job was the first day of session. Never having spent much time in the political arena or here in the Capitol, it's been a bit of a learning curve. And so I'm learning as fast as I can. But those six divisions are impressive in terms of how much of a scope they have and all of the Alaskan lives and industries that are really impacted or under the umbrella of DCCED. I can't say enough about the staff, but also, you know, I had no idea before I took the role that AmeriCorps volunteers or the Alaskan Native Language Preservation group was under the division of DCRA. So, I mean, all of those things are in addition to the stuff that's sort of fancy and you hear about. You know, we're doing a lot. We're able to roll out the ARPA funds yesterday. And so anyway, all of those things are part of what we do in a day under the department, but I would say there's equal focus on all three.
Thank you. And just a follow-up, do you see any reorganization needs within the department, or are you happy with the way it is?
Senator Stevens, through the chair, I think there might be some reorganization. Right now, we've been spending a lot of time, and I think I probably have conversations with each of you about, you know, the challenges with our business licensing and professional licensing services. So, you know, I can see some of the challenges really hitting the forefront of what I do in a day right now. And Senator Stevens, I'm sorry, can you tell me your question again? I was just completely lost.
I'm wondering if, I know you have six divisions, and do you see that there's ever any need to do any reorganization of the department, or are you very happy the way it looks right now?
Thank you. I knew I was going somewhere with that. But so as I listen to the staff, they're really the boots on the ground and the folks that are doing the heavy lift and the work. And I've just been very clear since the very first day I arrived, and that is I plan to make every decision based on what is best for Alaskans and with the information I have in front of me and using their input as the experts, because that's really what they are. And so at the same time, I understand from a management perspective, sometimes you can get a little entrenched. And so sometimes when you're entrenched in an issue, you can't always see the forest for the trees. So I appreciate coming in new to the position. I have the opportunity to evaluate in a way that folks may not have the same ability to be objective about when you're in it. And I'll quickly lose my ability to be really objective probably after too long. But so I've been having conversations with division directors about what's working and what isn't working. And I really value their feedback. But again, every decision I make is going to be based on what I think is best for Alaskans. And that may mean improvements in customer service. It may mean improvements in the systems, the database systems that we're using. And it may mean reorganization, though I haven't gotten far enough down that road yet.
Well, thank you, Ms. Sandy. Wish you well.
Thank you.
Thank you for those answers and those questions, Senator Stevens. Next, Senator Gray Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for being here today and your appointment. I serve on the DCCED and, Community Economic Development. I've been serving on the Sub-Finance Committee for 3 years. This is my fourth year now, and I finally think I remember what DCCED stands for. So, but anyway, with that said, we have our first meeting tonight. And so do you have any concerns in terms of your budget when it comes to anything, labor or anything to do with your budget that I should be aware of before our meeting tonight?
Senator Gray Jackson, I don't think that there's anything that you need to be concerned about with regard to tonight's presentation. And again, it'll be my first opportunity to greet everyone and be a part of the process. But for the most part, our budget is, in terms of presentations that I've participated in before major changes, it's fairly benign from my perspective. So it might be the one opportunity you have to not have too much controversy, but although I should definitely knock on wood about that.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Senator Manchiki?
Yeah, thank you. Commissioner Appointee, is that what we refer to them as before they're confirmed? Sandy, I appreciate you being here, and after speaking with you, meeting with you, I was actually kind of excited about it. Sometimes when people are appointed, I obviously won't mention any names, but I scratch my head about what the thought process may be in that particular appointment. And with you, it made it perfectly clear to me as your unique qualifications for Commerce Commissioner, your understanding between the balance of public and private sector, kind of not only interaction, but the fact that you know what it's like to have to make payroll, you understand marketing, logistics, sourcing from the ground up in a private sector business, yet you had a very responsible position as in a bureaucracy. And I think that's a really good mix. Often we've seen folks from one side or the other. Your experience on ADA and AEA sort of ties you into the more formal processes of the state. I'm excited. I'm just from what I know about you so far, and I haven't found anything hidden. I've looked. You're pretty squeaky. So I look forward to seeing what kind of great things you can do with a very important department.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Machicki, for those comments. Commissioner Designee Sandy, I have a few questions for you, and I appreciate the time that we've spent together in my office just learning a little bit more about you and, you know, your role as Commissioner Designee. And I appreciate the effort you put into meeting with your division directors and getting to know the department. So one of the things I wanted to ask about is, if you're confirmed, you would be commissioner of the only department that has a division that is required and mentioned in our Alaska State Constitution, which is the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. And at points in our state's history, we've actually had an entire department dedicated to that subject. But kind of to dovetail with Senator Stevens' question, considering how significant it is that that division is, you know, mentioned in our state constitution and our founders, our state constitutional, you know, drafters wanted to elevate that issue, that the work of that division. Can you share with the committee what that division does and how you see your being commissioner as aiding in that effort and what they do?
Thank you, Chair Costello. I am blown away by the team at the Division of Regional and Community Affairs, or Community and Regional Affairs. Director Mueller does a phenomenal job, but I had an opportunity while in Anchorage, and in this role I'm working both in Juneau and Anchorage. But if you go down to their offices, those folks are, sometimes it's a one-person part of the division taking a whole sector. And, you know, one lady, Paulette, has been there, I think, 20 years, but takes their job so seriously, works so hard on behalf of Alaskans, and absolutely has a handle on what she's doing. So in terms of my comment to your statement, I guess what I would say is, you know, I don't have the historical perspective. I appreciate the seriousness of what it is we're doing. And also, I want to say, I feel like from what I've observed, it's working very well. But again, what with that division helping the communities, the municipalities, in the way that they are, Sandra, Director Mueller right now has $1.2 billion worth of grant funding that she has either through community revenue sharing or grants that they're administering or helping communities with. That's a huge responsibility. And so I'm, as just an Alaskan who was, you know, I've been retired for the last couple of years, but sitting at home, I think when you're an armchair quarterback, sometimes you can be questioning whether or not things are getting done or getting done well or efficiently. And I've just been so impressed by the hard work of the team and all that they have under them. We've been spending a lot of time with Commissioner Bruni from DEC talking about the RUBA program, which, by the way, I knew nothing about before I started. But, you know, really seeing the reports from the staff and the ways in which they're assisting communities. So even if they haven't been going out to the communities, the calls that they're taking to help with establishment of different things for the municipalities, is the range of the questions is sort of a sometimes comical. But, and the other thing we're addressing through the RUBA program, of course, is in 2019, there was a real shift, I think, in philosophy, likely due to budget constraints and the ability to bear the cost of traveling out to the rural communities. So we saw a real dip in travel to the communities from the folks in our division, not because the folks in our division didn't want to get out to the communities. I think there was a lack of ability to do so on their part. And then, unfortunately, right after that, we were hit by COVID. And so now the communities are just getting to the place where they're really wanting visitors again. And, of course, we want to very much respect where they are. And if they want us to come, then we certainly have the opportunity, and they have all of my support to go back out into the communities and be doing some of that work.
Well, thank you very much for that. I also see on your resume that you have, and you mentioned it, that you've been involved, your family's been involved in multiple businesses. And my question focuses on that experience and how your new role will address that. So how can the state improve the environment for small business?
Thank you. Chair Costello, I'm very excited to roll up my sleeves and know more about that. But from my personal perspective, I think every way we can address regulations and how they are hampering small businesses, I certainly want to do that. You know, the majority of business in Alaska is done through small businesses. And so I have so much respect for those folks who, A, have the courage to stick themselves out there, but also just because knowing what the small businesses and those folks are adding to the community, not just in terms of their employees, but all the ways that they are helping to pay taxes or volunteering, or, you know, so many of the nonprofits really rely on those small businesses to help shore them up through difficult times, and those nonprofits then are vital to the community. So I think for me, the health of the community, knowing that that's part of our mission too, but I also think about in terms of the small businesses, and in answer to your question, I think what they really need is for the state to get out of the way in all the ways we can and allow the hardworking folks of Alaska to do the work that they would like to do. So that's my emphasis is sort of on that, but also in knowing what small businesses need right now, which is employees. I'm working really hard with CBPL again about where are the challenges for us to get licenses out and licenses out quicker so that folks can get to work.
Thank you. And that actually segues really well into my next question, which has to do exactly with the corporation's businesses and professional licenses division, and specifically in regards to military spouses. And we have heard in this committee over the years, and also from the highest levels in our military coming right from the top, that the number one challenge that military families face when they are stationed here is the licensure for their military spouse in the family. And we have grappled and wrestled with that challenge and how to, make it easier for those families. Right now, we have laws on the books that say that it's their application's expedited. It actually doesn't mean it gets done faster. It's just first in line. Can you talk about whether or not you're aware of that problem and how you see, you being commissioner, addressing that and trying to solve that problem where military spouses have to wait for their licensures, and what ideas you might have for that?
Thank you, Chair Costello. That is in the regulations right now. Addressing that are, I think, going to be a relief for folks. The delay right now is that the regulations are in front of the boards. And so each one of the boards, which is another piece to this, you know, it's sort of like chasing the string down, right? So there are a multitude of things that could potentially cause issues or delays along the pike. But one area that I've identified is, because before I had no idea how many different boards there are under professional licensing, you know, so it's not just architecture or engineering, it's hairdressers and, you know, marine pilots. So there's just all of these different boards. And when there are new regulations, those regulations then have to go, as I understand it, before each of those boards for approval. So I've been asked about the delays because, like you, it made so much sense for me to think, well, gosh, if somebody in active duty was transferred here, we absolutely want their spouse to be able to hit the ground running with the work that they're doing and have reciprocity for their licensure. So my understanding right now is that all of that is before, those regulations are before each of the individual boards for approval.
Thank you. And in your resume, you mentioned that you worked for the state in the Adult Protective Services as a designee, that and you were responsible for conducting investigations specifically into allegations of abuse or neglect with vulnerable adults. So specifically, my question has to do with the role of investigations within the department. So you mentioned that we have all of the licensure boards, and they all have, you know, the option to investigate claims that come to them, complaints that come from Alaskans. And I recognize that you started the day that the legislature came in, so I understand that this is not a problem of your making, but I think it's something that as commissioner is really important, and I hope you prioritize. And I'm curious to know, as commissioner, how you anticipate or contemplate your role and how involved you are going to be in any of those, in moving those investigations along. And specifically, we had the Board of Chiropractors come before us with their audit, and we learned that multiple Alaskans had launched complaints, you know, to the board, and that's what the board's job is to oversee those. And there were three periods of inactivity in that investigative process. One of the periods of inactivity was upwards of over 200 days, and I think it was maybe even 240 days. And so as a Labor and Commerce Committee, you know, we look at that and we question whether or not the process is working. And I was curious, with your experience doing the investigations that you've been involved with in your history, I mean, do you see yourself as overseeing that these investigations are moving along and being involved in the decision as to whether or not they're put on the shelf or if it's continued?
Chair Costello, I appreciate that question, and the reason why is because I am learning to have discipline in this role, and the reason I say that is because my learning style is, if I don't understand something, the best way for me to learn it is to go do it. So if I would have competing interests at the Pioneer Home in terms of, like, perhaps two of my managers in differing departments were fighting over resources, essentially, and I didn't understand where the problem was, I would just go, like, work in laundry for a little bit of time until I understood the process enough. So that's my learning style, right? So in this particular role, what I'm finding out is I will not likely have the time to go to each division and sit next to each person and learn what their processes are and why they do what they do and how they do it. But I completely agree that there are clearly issues at hand, and those issues are not serving Alaskans well. And they're not benefiting our economy either. They're also not protecting the consumer. So those are all of the things that, you know, are my mission when I get up in the morning, and I'm responsible to make decisions based on those things. So I absolutely am aware that there are challenges, and I have every intention of getting to working with the division directors to figure out where are the bottlenecks, what happened, where's the process, and also where your responsibility may be in this, because I have you know, I'm probably just dangerous enough in my new role to not really know what I'm supposed to say and not say. So I mean, I feel like some of this may be because there's excess regulation that we will need your help with in resolving, and I have every intention of providing that feedback to you. The other thing is, I would say I have to be cautious because coming from the Pioneer Homes, where many of our staff are licensed, I have my own personal feelings about whether or not sometimes it took too long, either for investigations or for licensing. So I basically was probably a super user in terms of the system. So I have some feedback probably on where I see we could take a look at either adding resources or tweaking processes. But because I'm so new in the role, I really want to spend time just hearing from the consumers about what their challenges have been, and then from the directors and the frontline staff about their processes. I've certainly learned a lot about what COVID has done to both our turnover rate and our volume. I didn't know before I took the position that there was, you know, almost a 20% increase in the volume of professional licenses coming to the division at the same time that there was such a massive spike in turnover. So all of those things, I think, contribute to what you were discussing. But certainly, I have every intention of being part of that solution.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you answering my question. Senator Stevens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is the only committee on the Senate side that you'll be appearing before. I guess the House will do the same thing. But I think that's right, isn't it, before it goes to the floor? Yeah. So I think you have a remarkable background. And one of the things that really fascinates me is that you started as a volunteer in the Pioneer Home and wound up running the place. So I guess my question has to do with a transition between being a volunteer to becoming the boss. Are there things that you thought you knew as a volunteer that you wanted to change things once you became the boss? Or maybe just the opposite question is, are there things you you thought you knew as a volunteer that simply were not possible once you became the boss? Can you talk about that transition between those jobs?
Senator Stevens, I appreciate that question. I think the older I've gotten, the more I realize how little I know. It seems like when I was young, I was pretty confident I knew everything. And now here I sit, and I'm happy to say I know I don't feel that way anymore. But I keep thinking about, I had forgotten about it until I got into the licensing issues and some of the hiring practices that we have. So when I was a volunteer at the Pioneer Home, I did a 6-month, I was a volunteer, and then in college, I had to petition the University of Montana to allow me to come back to the state of Alaska to do my 6-month unpaid internship, which was a requirement of my degree. They required me to do it, and I was directed to do it at St. Joe's in Missoula. And the more I thought about that and asked, I kept asking them the question of, why do I have to do it there? You know, if you can put things in place where you can ensure I'm still doing the work, why wouldn't I just go back to the community where I know I'm going to spend likely the rest of my life? And so there were workarounds if you just keep asking the question, right? So the system worked there, and I'm really grateful for that. But when I went to apply for the position as the social worker, which was my dream job, I was told that I didn't qualify for the job because the 6-month unpaid internship that I did didn't count as work experience. And so under the state's hiring system, there are things that are considered technical or professional experience, and some are counted and some aren't counted. I think about all those things because at a time right now when we are really going to have to get creative about solving our workforce challenge, I can't help but wonder how many of those systems may still be at play where we are inadvertently turning away folks who could be lifers in terms of their, you know, profession. That could be their dream job. They could spend the rest of their career in that job. And is there something that we're doing in our state hiring system that's hampering that? I will say there's a piece of my personality, and I don't really like to be told no, and I don't really like to be told what to do, and I'm working on both of those things. But I was so incensed by it that I wrote a letter to the director, Jim Cohn, and to his credit, and I just said, you know, I'm sure I articulated it better than that, but I basically just said, this is really dumb, and you're going to lose, the job will get, you'll hire somebody else, but just so you know, this was my dream job, and I'm perfect for it, and so your loss, this was dumb, and so to his credit, I was allowed to be able to be interviewed for the position, and I'm really grateful for that flexibility. So I guess in answer to your question, I think a lot about that because I feel like now is the perfect time for us to figure out ways in which we can access our talent better and faster and perhaps more creatively than we've ever done before. But I have hope that we can do that.
Thank you. That's a great answer. And I'm sure my colleagues at the table will understand because they don't like to be told what to do either. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator Stevens, for that great question, and Commissioner Designee for your really thoughtful and inspiring responses to our questions. Are there any further final questions for the Commissioner Designee? Okay, seeing none, thank you so much for coming before the committee. So far, we haven't moved anyone forward at this point, but we will at some point make that motion to move your name forward to the full legislature. So thank you.
I appreciate all of your time. Thank you for letting me come. And somebody will let me know if I have a job. I'll just stay posted. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And we'll take a brief Eddie's for the next bill. Labor and Commerce Committee. We just heard from the Commissioner Designee, Julie Sandy, for the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. At this point, I will go ahead and open public testimony on her appointment. Is there anyone in Juneau or online that wishes to provide public testimony? Okay, seeing none, we'll close public testimony on the appointment of Julie Sandy. And next on our agenda, we have Senate Bill 159. I'm going to invite my aide, Melanie Wilterdink, forward. The intention here is to have public testimony on this bill today, and it's the second hearing in Labor and Commerce. Welcome, Melanie. Thank you for just giving a brief reminder of what the bill does for the committee before we open it for public testimony.
Thank you, Chair Costello, members of the committee. For the record, this is Melody Wilterdink, staff to Senator Costello. And so just a brief overview, what Senate Bill 159 does, and this is an act relating to unemployment benefits, it will index the duration of unemployment benefits that Alaskan claimants can receive to the unemployment rate. And so simply put, when there are more jobs, that unemployment rate is going to be lower, fewer weeks of benefits will be available. When there are fewer jobs, that unemployment benefit duration is going to increase significantly to make sure that people have the time that they need to find jobs when there aren't as many available.
Thank you, Melody. And then there is the section of the bill that addresses seasonal workers. Can you just explain briefly what that section of the bill accomplishes?
Thank you, Chair. Yes. So right now we have a unemployment system that says if your income is inconsistent throughout the year, if you're earning, say, seasonally for whether you're a fisherman, whether you're working in tourism, whatever that might be, you actually won't get as many weeks of unemployment benefits as someone who has consistent income throughout the year. And so this bill will say, everyone who's been working and paying into this system, who's applying for benefits and facing the same economy, they're going to receive the same duration of benefits. So we're no longer telling seasonal workers that you're not deserving of as many benefits, even though you've also been paying into this system.
Thank you very much, Melody. Are there questions that the committee has for Melody? Okay, seeing none, thank you, Melody. We'll go ahead and open public testimony on Senate Bill 159, and we will start with Jeff Garness, who's calling in from Anchorage. Jeff, if you could provide your name for the committee and if you're affiliated with anyone or just calling in as an individual Alaskan, and then provide your testimony, please.
Hello, members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Jeff Garness. I'm a private business owner here in Anchorage and have been for a number of decades. Do I need to spell my last name out for you?
I'm looking at Carrie. No, thank you. We've got it.
Okay, great. I'll go ahead. I recently submitted an op-ed for publication expressing support for Senate Bill 159, but I also wanted to go on record with you as committee members. As the primary payers of the unemployment system, business owners like me have a vested interest in seeing that the program is an effective safety net that carries workers from one job to the next. But over the past 2 years, pandemic-related pressures have weighed heavily on the unemployment system, exacerbating and exposing some of the unemployment program's flaws and weaknesses, and ultimately decreasing the program's solvency. Both employers and workers deserve reforms to the unemployment system that shore up the program for the long term. We all want the unemployment program to exist for hardworking Alaskans that need a helping hand between jobs, and Senate Bill 159 contains several proposals to accomplish that very goal. Alaska's current unemployment system doesn't account for the availability of jobs when determining the duration of benefits. Senate Bill 159 would tie the actual job market to the duration of benefits, thus treating all Alaskans more fairly, even if they work a seasonal job. the indexing of unemployment insurance benefits to the current state unemployment rate would ensure individuals receive the support they need when jobs are scarce, but also giving individuals the push they may need to get back to work when jobs are plentiful. Employers should not be forced to compete with the unemployment insurance program when jobs are available, nor should adults be encouraged to forego work and trade their independence. This bill also requires checking suspicious activities such as multiple filings for benefits through the same IP address. And these simple reforms would target fraudsters and help to maintain benefits for those who truly need them. I encourage you to pass Senate Bill 159 to help Alaskans get started on ensuring our state's unemployment system is poised for success in the future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for your testimony. Next, calling in from Anchorage, Roy Siren. Roy, if you could state your name for the record and if you're affiliated with anyone, and then provide your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon, members of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. My name is Roy Siren from Anchorage, and I own a small construction business here. And as an employer of seasonal and non-seasonal employees, I wish to express my support of Senate Bill 159. My company provides commercial, residential, and specialty construction services, and that means that we have a limited window within which to accomplish much of our work building Alaska. We must ramp up employment during construction months and lay off employees when the work closes or stops in winter. And typically, we reduce our number of employees by up to 50% in the late fall when the ground freezes. And in 2021, summer hiring was a challenge. Even for labor jobs with no experience required, we had very few applicants, and many of those who did apply never followed through for interviews. Our company is honored to build what Alaska needs, and we're privileged to be able to provide jobs to Alaskans so that they can support their families. But I think we must have a pool of employees from which to draw in order to do these things. And I was encouraged to see Senate Bill 159 introduced because I think it will improve our state employment market when the state unemployment rate gets directly connected to the period of time for which a worker can draw benefits. It will put potential workers into the market at just the right time, creating a larger supply of workers from which our company can hire. And this, in turn, allows us to do more business, hire more employees, and contribute positively to Alaska's economy. It seems to me that Senate Bill 159 will help reduce Alaska's labor shortage and help employers like me to hire more workers. And that's good for workers, good for my business, but more importantly, it's good for Alaska. And I appreciate the committee giving consideration to this bill.
Thank you very much, Roy. Next, we have Bethany Markham, who's calling in from the Alaska Policy Forum.
Good afternoon, Chair Costello and members of Senate Labor and Commerce. Alaska's economic recovery from the pandemic has not been strong. We have not yet recovered the jobs lost, and our unemployment trust funds have been greatly reduced. Too many Alaskans have not returned to the labor force, and by not fully replenishing the funds in our trust, we are putting our economy at risk in the event of future crises. Other states, such as Idaho, North Carolina, Alabama, Florida, and Tennessee, have policies in place that promote a healthier economy. Those states link unemployment benefits to economic conditions. In those states, when economic conditions are such that there are simply not many job openings, workers receive payments for longer periods of time. And when employers are hiring and many jobs are available, benefits are provided for a shorter duration. It's a policy that helps in multiple ways. First, it helps by restoring the funds in our trust so that we can continue to support those who've lost jobs during difficult times. Second, it helps individuals get the support they need and return to the workforce when job openings do exist. And third, it helps to create a market of workers for employers who are trying to hire as they maintain or expand their businesses. The data from those states which have implemented this policy is strong and compelling. They have continued recovering jobs post-pandemic at a much higher rate than Alaska. Their residents have returned to the workforce, and now their state trust fund balances are on the right trajectory. The data also shows that people who are out of the job market for longer periods of time are less likely to return to work. Thus, our policies should encourage workers to return as soon as the economy supports the jobs. As elected officials, you have the power to pass policies that will put our economy on the right path. I encourage you to take a look at policies such as this that will reduce Alaska's labor shortage and improve our economy. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bethany. Appreciate you calling in and providing testimony. Is there anyone here in Juneau or online that wishes to provide testimony on Senate Bill 159? Okay, seeing none, we will close public testimony on Senate Bill 159. And we have several individuals online who are available for questions. And one of them is Brian Sikma, who's the visiting fellow with Opportunity Solutions Project. Brian, thank you for being available for questions. I was curious what your experience has been with similar bills such as this one, which links and indexes the benefits duration to the unemployment rate.
Absolutely, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Brian Sikma. I'm a visiting fellow at Opportunity Solutions Project. Our organization has worked in a number of states that have either already implemented this type of an indexing reform or this year are looking to do so. And so what you're seeing here is Senate Bill 159 is not a unique proposal. States like Tennessee, I know Virginia is looking at this as well. Indiana considered legislation like this. Missouri is still meeting in session, is also looking to do this. And really there's a handful of reasons. I think, you know, one of the earlier witnesses kind of captured well, but really all of them summarized some of the benefits that you're going to see in terms of labor markets, in terms of responsiveness to job openings, and also even to trust fund stability, right? So COVID-19, the pandemic, really dealt a body blow to a lot of state trust funds for unemployment insurance. And you know, according to some calculations that my colleagues and I have run, Alaska's unemployment insurance trust fund would grow by about $96 million a year. And so for comparison, right, pre-pandemic, the Alaska unemployment trust fund stood at about $480 million on an annual basis. So pretty significant uptick in terms of funds available and that would go towards the solvency of that fund without having to raise taxes on employers or employees, right? Because Alaska is one of those unique states where employees do make a small contribution to this fund. So I think a lot of states are looking at this because they want to find a way to, without having to raise taxes, get their trust funds back on track. And they're also looking at workforce shortages. At the end of 2021, according to U.S. Department of Labor data, Alaska had more job openings, seasonally adjusted per capita, than any other state in the union, which is pretty remarkable. And I think that speaks to the fact that there's a lot of growth and opportunity in the state. But there's also need for workers then to be plugged into those jobs. And, you know, passing something like this would certainly, you know, based on what we've seen in other states, such as North Carolina, Georgia, and Florida, which have kind of done it the longest, and have gone through both the Great Recession and now the pandemic, which have been two major impacts to the system. We've seen workers return to work in almost twice as fast in those states as they have in states that don't index. So on a number of fronts here, I think this is a kind of a multiple solution bill that kind of presents in a single formula how you can incentivize people returning to work.
Thank you. Are there questions, Senator Stevens?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Brian. Could you just tell us in a very simple way what indexing reform is and how it works?
Absolutely, Senator, through the chair. So indexing simply establishes a floor, right, a minimum threshold that says, you know, at a certain unemployment rate that's seasonally adjusted, that's measured with federal data, with state input that's out there, then there's going to be a minimum amount of benefits available. I should say not even amount, but duration of benefits, right, because there's nothing in this bill that actually changes the benefit calculation for Alaska. And then for every half a percentage point that you see the unemployment rate tick up, it adds an additional week of benefits and up to a certain cap. And so under this legislation, you know, the floor or the minimum duration of benefits available will be 12 weeks if your unemployment rate is below 7%, which it is currently. And then it would take up all the way to 20 weeks if your unemployment insurance rate is at 10.51% or higher, frankly.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Brian. And appreciate you making yourself available and calling in from Wisconsin. And we also have online Clifford Napier, who's with the Assistant Director of the Division of Employment and Training Services. And Clifford, I was curious from your standpoint, so if a person is receiving unemployment benefits and they, instead of going back to work, are we also allowing those individuals to receive training prior to going back to work? I mean, how does your division overlap with the unemployment insurance benefit program?
Good afternoon, Chair Costello and committee members. For the record, my name is Clifford Napier. I'm the Assistant Director for the Unemployment Insurance Program. For individuals that are collecting unemployment and do not return to work within a certain amount of time, they are required to search for work, depending on their location, at least 2 job searches a week, and they are required to report those. We also register those folks with the job centers, and we do require them to go through a reemployment assessment program, which looked at areas where we could assist those individuals to be better ready for the labor market. That could include training, referrals. That could include just things such as working on improving their resumes. So it depends on the individual.
Okay. Are there any questions that committee members have? No. Thank you very much for being available for questions. We also have Shonda O'Brien, who's the Director of Public Assistance, and also Lennon Weller, who's with the Department of Labor. Do members have any questions for those individuals? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much for making yourself available this afternoon. I'm going to take a brief at ease. Welcome back to Senate Labor and Commerce Committee. We do end the meeting at 3 o'clock, so prior to that, we have a motion from Senator Stevens. Senator Stevens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the committee substitute for Senate Bill number 159, version India, also referred to as 32-LS1313/I, be advanced from the committee with individual recommendations and the attached fiscal notes.
Is there any objection to moving the bill? Okay, seeing none, the bill does move from committee. After we adjourn, I ask that the members stick around to sign the documentation. And I wanted to also mention that this concludes our afternoon meeting today. Our next meeting will be Monday, March 21st at 1:30. The meeting on Friday is canceled. So with that, at 3:03, we are adjourned.